Welcome to the Shiur in Ibn Ezra Parshas Kisisa. There's a long Ibn Ezra at the beginning of Perek Lamed Beis, which is the Perek which speaks about the Egel Azov, the golden calf, clearly one of the main topics of discussion in Parshas Kisisa. I wanted to try to go through the Ibn Ezra because he is one of the first of a series of Rishonim who really lay out a certain approach to understanding the whole parsha of the Egel Azov. Again, so many questions that we have about that, the story of the golden calf, and some Rishonim agree with this approach, some Rishonim, maybe Chazal in certain places, disagree with this approach, but nonetheless, it certainly helps us shape and formulate an approach to this very, very difficult story. The very beginning of Lamed Bey, the Perek Lamed Bey, is Amar Avraham HaMechaber. Somewhat atypically, the Ibn Ezra starts off by saying, says the author Avraham Ibn Ezra, I feel the need to speak at length about the whole story of the golden calf. Some say that what was the impetus to build the Egel? So Chur was killed. Again, Chazal tell us, even Mizbeach Lefanov, right, that that's a reference to the idea that Chur was killed by the people. Aaron was afraid, and out of a sense of fear, Aaron acquiesced to the people's request for this Egel, and, you know, that's what really prompted him to do that. Yesh li she'omer, some try to cast Aaron in a somewhat better light. Again, the notion that Aaron was just frightened because the people killed Chor and he figured that he was next, you know, depicts Aaron in a somewhat cowardly fashion. You know, okay, so as Ibn Ezra is going to go on to say in a few moments, look, if the people are demanding Avodah Zarah, and you know that by giving in, you know, that by your refusal to give in to them, they're going to kill you, so be it. So give up your life on Kiddush Hashem. What do you mean, you know, that you were afraid because Chor was killed? So some give a slightly different twist on that, a somewhat more complimentary twist to Aaron, says the Ibn Ezra. Some say that Aaron wasn't worried so much for his personal safety, but rather that Aaron said, if the people kill me after having killed Chor, that will be such an incredible sin for the Jewish people that they're going to be punished so grievously, you know, we can't even imagine such a thing. Now, there are hapshats. Essentially, Ibn Ezra, if you want to try to approach the story from a pshat perspective, you might say, ha'egel avodah zarah, ha'ma pachad aron shiyeh ha'reg. If we really say that the egel azov was a form of avodah zarah, that was really a form of idolatry that the people were worshipping, as again seems to be the way certainly many sources in Chazal understand what the Egel Azov was. It was a rejection of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You know, they were exchanging God for this golden calf. But that's really what it was. Why was Aaron ready to build the Egel Azov out of a fear of being killed? Says that in Ezra, throughout Jewish history, there have been people, chassidim, you know, pious people, who gave up their lives rather than embrace a foreign religion, right? That was true throughout Jewish history. And these are people who, says that in Ezra, didn't even reach the feet of Aaron in his chassidus, in his piety. So is it imaginable that Aaron HaKohen would have, so to speak, chickened out? In other words, was faced with this terrible choice, build us an Avodah Zarah or we'll kill you, right? That Aaron would have just thrown up his hands and said, okay, I guess I have no choice, I have to build the Avodah Zarah. What do you mean you have to build the Avodah Zarah? What about all these Jews throughout the generations who sacrificed their life on Kiddush Hashem? And one of those famous examples, Hanan, Mishael, and Azariah, allowed themselves to be thrown into a fiery furnace rather than bow down to the statue which was erected by Nebuchadnezzar. Right? And again, the Ibn Ezra does reference it, as we know, the opinion of Rabbi Tam, who was a contemporary of Ibn Ezra, is that the statue of Nebuchadnezzar was not even Avodah Zarah, it was simply a depiction of the king. It wasn't meant to be a deity in some way. And how could it be that Aaron would make this golden calf as an avodah zarah? You know, even to do so in order to save his life. After all, certainly we would all acknowledge that creating an avodah zarah is a far worse sin than bowing down to an avodah zarah. Hello, Aaron Kadosh Yisrael, how are you? Aaron is the Holy One of God, the Navi Al Yisrael, Nisus Rabu Sinra Al Yadoi Moshe Al Chiz. He's a holy man, he's a Navi. He was a vehicle for giving many mitzvahs to the Jewish people. It's impossible to say that he just kind of chickened out, threw up his hands and said, you know, I guess I a man's got to do what a man's got to do. I guess I have to build this avodah zarah, lest they kill me. If that was the case, then Chor was a better man than Aaron, because Chor gave up his life rather than create an avodah zarah.
Wasn't Aaron trying to delay them?
But let's even say that that's the case. But is that a justification for building an avodah zarah? Right? I mean, it seems to be nothing would be a justification for building an avodah zarah.
He felt it would be worse than him.
But what would be worse than avodah zarah? In other words, that.
No, I mean, he was waiting for Moses. He felt they would kill him before Moses came down.
Okay, so that's essential. Let him give up his life, right? In other words, to build an avodah zarah. What could possibly justify that? So he writes, let's look at the story, says the Ibn Ezra. If Aaron is indeed guilty of having created an avodah zarah, so Moshe Rabbeinu should have killed his own brother. Because after all, what happens? Moshe Rabbeinu comes down and tells the Bnei Levi, kill anyone who is involved in worshipping this Egel Hazal. What about Aaron? What about Aaron? What, nepotism? You know, if you're the brother of Moshe Rabbeinu, you get off? How come Aaron isn't, you know, punished, you know, with death as a result? What happens? Moshe davens on behalf of Aaron, and he kills those who worship the avodah zarah. So, how did Aaron get off so scot-free? And look at what happens to Aaron. Aaron goes on to be the Kohen Gadol, bringing about atonement for the entire Jewish people, not only him, but his entire family, forever and ever and ever. How do you square that with somebody who made an avodah zarah on behalf of the entire Jewish people? If you look later on in Parshas Shmini, when Aaron and his sons are inaugurated into the kahuna, so they're told, take an egel, take a calf a year old to serve as a chatos. And Chazal say that the egel there is supposed to be a kapara for the cheto egel. Plus, you see that, you know, Aaron isn't being held accountable for the cheto egel. Says the Ibn Ezra, no, that's not a correct interpretation. That egel that Aaron and his sons brought was not a kapara, nothing to do with the cheto egel. By the way, Chazal, you know, in the Medrash, identify the bringing of that egel by Aaron and his sons as indeed a kapara for the cheto egel. But again, you know, the Ibn Ezra is not shy, you know, to either say that a particular interpretation of Chazal is a das yachid, it's an individual's opinion, it's not a universal opinion, or if he feels that Chazal don't have this interpretation as a mesorah, as a particular tradition, he's not shy to disagree with it. And here he just says, without elaboration, no, that egel that Aaron brought had nothing to do with being mechaper for avodah zarah.
So what was the
kapara for that? Right? What's my proof? Says the Ibn Ezra that tar, which Aaron brought on the day of his inauguration, has nothing to do with the chet or egel. His answer is because every Kohen Gadol has the mitzvah to bring a tar on Yom Kippur, and v'lanu chamo ma'gavur chasos ha'av. Right? It's not just being mechaper for Aaron's sin, because everyone was descended through Allah's on Yisomer. But all of the time, Shashiva Yisrael, Sir Yisim, Echel, Echat, Yisrael, 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 Echel, Echat, Right? And we also find that when the Kohanim were inaugurated, Klal Yisrael had to dedicate a shoyer, a goat, as part of the proceedings. That was going to be a chatos, a sin offering. And there's no concept that Klal Yisrael sinned with a shoyer, you know, that they built a golden goat or something of that nature. Gam par adumah, and then a lechakar avodah zarah. And don't tell me, says the Ibn Ezra, that the par adumah, Parshas Korah, don't tell me that the par adumah is also being mechakar for the chet ha'egel, which, by the way, Rashi says it does at the end, you know, at the end of the commentary of Parshas Chukas. Lach l'tayah hatzneim, right? The purpose of the par adumah is to achieve tahara, right? Is to achieve ritual purity. It's not tied in any way to a kapara for a sin. Again, the Ibn Ezra over here is reacting to various statements which appear in Chazal, which appear in Rashi, and the Ibn Ezra is basically saying, don't look to any of the karbonos as being kaparos for the chet or egel in any which way, and he disassociates those karbonos from the chet or egel. B'chol anshe hamechkar modim, כי השם לא יבחשליח שידע כי בסוף הוא יעבור עבוד הזורו ואין כל נובי שליח. Right? It's impossible again that HaKadosh Baruch Hu would choose a shliach, someone to represent the Jewish people to bring karbonos who would be involved in Avodah Zarah. והנה ראינו שאמר נוס לפעמים עושה תומך ובריח או איש חסידך והנה לא הזכר דבר העגל רק לא נמצא בו אלא מה שנמצא במשה. Furthermore, again, Ibn Ezra is just building his case that Aaron cannot be held accountable for having, you know, brought the Jewish people to Avodah Zarah. After all, when Moshe Rabbeinu is about to pass away, he blesses Shevet Levi by saying, Tumecha v'yorecha l'ishcha tidecha. The Urim and the Tumim were given to that pious man, the way that Ibn Ezra seems to understand the pasuk is that Ish Hatzidecha is a reference to Aaron, right? And it was the Urim and Tumim were given to the Kohen Gadol, who's the Ish Chassid, who's originally Aaron HaKohen. So how can he call Aaron HaKohen Ish Hatzidecha if, again, he was somebody who built an Avodah Zarah? The Yesh Omrim, so some say, he saw Rimu Aaron. So also to push Egel, this is Aaron Azal the Eish Lo Yigish, for I also match the Chayim Bo Eish Lo Yigish Lo Egel Azal. Some say you're right, Aaron was a good guy, but he was hoodwinked by Klal Yisrael. What do you mean? Klal Yisrael made some kind of form, you know, that had the form of an Egel Azal. They asked Aaron, hey, we should take this gold and throw it into this cauldron over here? He says, sure, I guess. Why not? He throws it into the cauldron, and lo and behold, because, you know, the Jewish people tricked, or certain Jewish people tricked Aaron. They put the form, the shape of an angel in the cauldron in such a way so that when the gold came out of the cauldron, it was already shaped as an angel. And the riot to that is what Aaron says to Moshe later on, I threw the gold into the fire, and this calf emerged almost by itself. This is also not correct, says the Ibn Ezra. Ki Aaron eich bacharo Hashem im hoya tipesh, she removed soil. So good. So you went, you wanted Aaron not to be a Rasha, an Ovid Avodah Zarah. So you know what you made him into? You made him into an idiot, right? I took the gold, I threw it into the cauldron, and lo and behold, who would have thought? A golden calf came out. Says there's an Ezra, that's idiocy. Because Baruch Hu wouldn't pick Aaron to be the Bechir Hashem, to be the Kohen Gadol, if he could so easily be fooled by the people in such a way. Hey, what's that? Oh, that's a golden calf. Where'd that come from? Who knows? I don't know. Good question. Right? Inconceivable that this is
the person throwing gold into a cauldron does not produce. So what Aaron was doing was getting rid of melting down the gold or doing something or making the gold unable to be used by these people. Who is to assume that a calf would come out?
Right.
Of course, of being idiots.
Right. So I think what the Ibn Ezra is saying as follows. Once the calf emerged, At that point, Aaron should have done something. His inaction at that point, coupled by what he says to Moshe Rabbeinu, "Vayeseh ha'egel hazeh," gee whiz, you know, the eagle popped out, you know, gives the impression of somebody who's just sort of naive, you know, I had no idea, it just kind of popped out, and then I did nothing about it, right? So I think it's that that the answer is bothersome. It indicates, you know, almost stupidity, you know, which is impossible to attribute to Aaron. And by the way, after the eagle emerges, so Aaron builds the mizbeach, he builds an altar, and he says, oh, everybody should bring karbanos. That doesn't sound like somebody who's being hoodwinked, you know? So that's not acceptable, says the Ibn Ezra. The most interesting suggestion. Some say, says the Ibn Ezra, that the Aaron refers to throughout the Mice of Egel is the other Aaron. Not Aaron, the brother of Moshe. Aaron Schwartz, you know, some other Aaron who happened to be there. Sounds a Hezel, right? That's foolishness. That's nothingness, says the Ibn Ezra. What's that? I don't know. He doesn't attribute it to anyone. But again, sometimes the Ibn Ezra will quote certain ideas where we don't know what the original source is. It's a fascinating suggestion, right? The other Aaron, right? You know, it was the other guy, right? But he says that doesn't make any sense. Ki akol on kavu ala ho v'tachas Moshe, right? Moshe's gone. It says by kohel ha'am ala harom, right? The people gathered around Aaron. They gathered around Aaron Schwartz, right? I mean, they gathered around the one who was seen as being the second in command to Moshe Rabbeinu. Right? It just doesn't make any sense, you know, to assume that we're talking about some other Aaron. The chen kosu v'nei Aaron v'chur. V'mhoi achil, v'amu lo hargo Aaron v'moshe v'rita tov v'na hor. And by the way, when Moshe Rabbeinu goes up to Har Sinai, he says, v'nei Aaron v'chur y'mochem, right, v'bal v'ar yigash aleim, Aaron v'chur are with you, so I'm putting Aaron in charge, so, I mean, it makes sense that they would go to Aaron, not Aaron Schwartz, right, but Aaron ben Amram, right? And by the way, if there is this other, you know, pseudo-Aram, Aaron Schwartz running around who made the angel, so how come real Aaron, you know, Aaron ben Amram, didn't kill him for his role in building the Egel Azov, right? So, I mean, it still comes back to the same question. Okay, if this whole Egel Azov is being made by the phantom Aaron, so where's the real Aaron? You know, why isn't he doing anything while all of this is unfolding? Right, but again, that goes back to Ibn Ezra mentioned that at the beginning, because it's hard to understand. Aaron wasn't ready to be Moser Nefesh for Kiddush Hashem? It seems like a very, very bizarre thing. Ki ein mashma devaro, v'achar shabana hamizbeach l'tnei oegel, siva l'achris b'machon ashiyishkutu machar b'mizbeach shabana, kimo isu chag ba'avosim, v'chein osu v'ashkiru machar s'v'yalu olos v'machar s'alev enim o'ilos, ki anoke v'sashem api diburo yehoreg. Right. He also mentions another interesting suggestion. When Aaron builds the mizbeach and he says chag l'ashem machar, there will be a holiday for Yudkei Vavkei for HaKadosh Baruch Hu tomorrow. So some suggest, you know what he meant? He meant Moshe is going to come down from the mountain tomorrow, kill all of those who were involved in worshipping this Avodah Zarah, and that's going to be the Chag L'Hashem. That's going to be the holiday for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, where the of the Avodah Zarah are going to be killed. Says the Ibn Ezra, that doesn't sound like what Aaron is saying, right? Chag L'Hashem Ocher sounds like we're going to go tomorrow and bring karbanos to this deity, right? To this Avodah Zarah. And, you know, even if he meant Chag L'Hashem Ocher, tomorrow Moshe Rabbeinu is going to come down and kill all of those involved in the building of this Avodah Zarah, that's certainly not what it sounded like he was saying. And his machshavos, frankly, you know, the fact that he may have thought that is really irrelevant, since that's not what the people understood when they heard him say that. The Kacha Omer and Elchav and Abdullahim Acherim, fine. Um, the Ibn Ezra then goes on to speak a little bit about how whenever a person says something, it's the way what you say is understood that matters, not what you think you're saying. So the Ibn Ezra over here repeats his criticism of a famous Rashi that we're familiar with. When Yaakov comes in before Yitzchak Avinu, dressed up as Esav, and Yitzchak says to him, "Hakazeh b'ni imlo," you know, "Are you my son?" So Yaakov answers, "Anochi Esav b'chorecha," "I am Esav, your firstborn." Rashi famously tells us that Yaakov wasn't really lying, right? Because he said, "Anochi kama Esav b'chorecha," "I'm me." And Esav is your firstborn. And here too, the Ibn Ezra, just like he does back in Parshas Toldos, takes issue with that interpretation. Says the Ibn Ezra, that's not telling the truth. If I tell something in a way that I'm technically telling the truth, but I do it in such a way so that you understand something different, which is a lie, so then says the Ibn Ezra, that's called lying. If Yaakov Avinu says, "Anochi, kama, Esav v'charecha," by which he means, "I am me, but Esav is your firstborn." But obviously, when Yitzchak hears these words, that's not what he understands. Yitzchak hears, "Anochi Esav v'charecha," "Yeah, I, the person standing in front of you, are Esav." So says the Ibn Ezra, so don't tell me technicalities. Well, technically, I didn't say I was Esav, I said something else. If you say X, and, you know, the person, listening to you reasonably understands Y, so it's as if you said Y, right? So here, over here as well, to try to say that Aaron was saying all of these things, he said one thing, the people understood it one way, but really he was trying to tell them not to worship the Avodah Zarah, it just doesn't pass muster, it doesn't pass the definition of a truthful statement. The Atta, Omar Lecha, Das Hagon Rav Sadia. Let me tell you, says the Ibn Ezra, the explanation of Sadia Gon has in the whole Maisa of the Eko. Omar, ki Aaron also be Arma, kasher also Yehu, al Kain bana Mizdeach. The sense of Sadia Gon, Aaron was acting craftily. He built the Mizdeach as a way of craftily getting the people to delaying the people to make sure that they wouldn't actually worship Avodah Zarah. The Hiksa al Nafsho in Cain Lama Hisana Pashem Bo, the Yinei Heshu Babush Lahar Gomiya Kasher Asa Moshe Bebo. Says the Sadia Gon Ai, so if he was acting craftily to try to stall for time until Moshe Rabbeinu would come there, so why is HaKadosh Baruch Hu actually angry at Aaron? Instead, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was angry at Aaron. Moshe had to die on the behalf of Aaron. So why was HaKadosh Baruch Hu so angry at Aaron? He was smart. He was trying to delay things until Moshe Rabbeinu would come. Right? So Rav Sadia's answer to that is, well, he shouldn't have acted so craftily. He should have just gone and killed the Ovdei Avodah Zarah on his own, as Moshe Rabbeinu did. He shouldn't have tried to deal with them in a tricky fashion. He should have been straightforward and taken care of them and killed them on the spot. But I disagree with the Pshat of Rav Sadia Gon. Because when Aaron builds the Mizbeach, he said, "Chag leYud Kei Vav Kei Machar." Tomorrow is a holiday for Hashem, for Yud Kei Vav Kei. V'zeh Hashem u'shem esem u'kvod Hashem. Or Yisayir v'acherimo k'milas Elohim shulin yonim rabim. While it's true that the word Elohim can be used to refer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it can be used to refer l'hazel to other gods, the name Yud Kei Vav Kei only refers to our God, to Hashem Yisbarach. So when Aaron says Chag leYud Kei Vav Kei Machar, he must be talking about our God. So how can you possibly accuse Aaron of building an Avodah Zarah when he then immediately after creating the Mizbeach for the Egel Azov says, tomorrow we're going to celebrate and make a party for Yud Kei Vav Kei? Okay, so hold on a little bit. The Atta Ochel Lafarz Dach Sarak Sasa Sov. Let me start to explain a little bit of what's going on over here, says the Ibn Ezra. God forbid that the Egel Azav was a form of Avodah Zarah, or that Aaron HaKohen would make an Avodah Zarah. God Yisrael did Shu Avodah Zarah. The truth is, Klal Yisrael didn't want an Avodah Zarah either. Their desire to have an Egel Azav was not to replace HaKadosh Baruch Hu Chalila. That Chashu Shemes Moshe Shehisiyam Miyamsuf. Klal Yisrael thought that Moshe Rabbeinu had passed away, and their need was to replace not Chalila HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but have a replacement for Moshe Rabbeinu. Kiro Shehamon Eino Yoreh Behar Sinai U'moshe Hishake Shom Arboim Yom Ve'en Kolach Ba'adam Luch Yosef Man Belo Macho Kilo Omer Lohem Masa Yered. Chalisa actually had a very reasonable question. They said, we don't see that the mud is falling up on Har Sinai. Moshe Rabbeinu has been up there for 40 days and 40 nights. As far as we know, he didn't pack once, so he hasn't eaten anything for the past 40 days, which indeed the Pasuk says, Lechem lo achalti yomayim lo shasisi, right? He didn't eat bread or drink water for 40 days. It was miraculous. Chalisrael didn't realize there was a miracle going on. They said, he disappeared, he didn't have any provisions, there's no mon up there. He must be dead. Of course he's dead, right? Because how can he be away for 40 years, for 40 days without sustenance, and still survive? And Moshe Rabbeinu didn't know exactly how long he was going for, says the Ibn Ezra. That's the Ibn Ezra's understanding. But his prophet said to Moshe Rabbeinu, come to Har Sinai, but there was no timetable that was given to Moshe Rabbeinu when he went up. There, 40 days go by, the people turn to one another, we said, look, we have no idea when you're supposed to be coming back down. Again, this is different than Chazal's understanding, that he gave them the 40-day timeline, and they made a miscalculation as to whether he was supposed to come back exactly now or slightly later. Says that Ibn Ezra of Klal Yisrael had no idea when Moshe Rabbeinu was coming back. Moshe Rabbeinu had no idea when he was coming back. He didn't know that he was going to be there for 40 days. So he's gone, and he's gone, and he's gone, and he's gone, and he's gone. And people say, he must be dead. He went up there. He took no food. There's no food up there. He hasn't been back for 40 days. He's probably dead. So when the people come to Aaron, they say, Kum asei lanu Elohim, the word Elohim does not mean God. Rise up and make for us an Elohim. Elohim does not mean a God, but rather it means kavod chone b'tzuras yaviyah. It means a physical representation of glory. Right? In other words, we know already Elohim can mean judges, Elohim can mean malachim, it doesn't have to mean a deity. The people go and they say to Aaron HaKohen, we need some kind of physical manifestation of the glory of God. When Moshe Rabbeinu was alive, Shechina medaberes mitoch grono. The Shechina came out of Moshe Rabbeinu's mouth when he spoke. Moshe Rabbeinu isn't here anymore. We need some kind of physical representation of that glory, or some kind of physical conduit, I should say. Some kind of physical conduit of that glory from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So we can have someone to replace Moshe Rabbeinu. We'll pick up Ezra Hashem after night, and we'll see the rest of the feast and how the Ibn Ezra understands the Chetel Eichel. This is the second part of the Shir in Ibn Ezra, Parshas Kisisa. Ibn Ezra has posed a whole series of questions about how it's possible that Aaron could have been involved in the Chetel Egel, how Aaron could have been responsible for building Avodah Zarah. After going through various different possibilities as to how to explain the story, we just began seeing Ibn Ezra's own interpretation. The essence, the kernel of what the Ibn Ezra says is that the Egel Azar was not in fact Avodah Zarah. The people didn't want an Avodah Zarah, and Aaron didn't build them an Avodah Zarah. The people came to Aaron and they said, Kum asei lanu Elohim. Go and make for us an Elohim. What does Elohim mean? Elohim means, in this context, the divine glory in a physical body. And he goes on to explain as follows. What's that? No. So let's see. Right? Divine glory in a physical body. The Kacha Amru, they said as follows, Asher Yelchu L'Foneinu. We want an Elohim who will go before us. If you contemplate when Klal Yisrael left Mitzrayim, their first traveling, you'll understand what they want when they say Asher Yochel Lefonim. The note in the Ibn Ezra references the words of the Ibn Ezra back in Parshas Bishalach, where basically the Ibn Ezra explains as follows. We find when Klal Yisrael leaves Mitzrayim, there's a malach, there's an angel that goes before them. A malach is taking them across Yam Suf. Where did that malach go? Right? So says the Ibn Ezra, after Klal Yisrael crossed over Yam Suf, the malach disappeared, and instead Moshe Rabbeinu led the Jewish people. So Moshe served in that role as a malach. In other words, we find this concept that HaKadosh Baruch Hu instills a non-divine entity, a malach, a human being, with a special hashrah, hashchina. No one's saying the malach is God, no one's saying Moshe Rabbeinu is God. But each one, respectively, is a leader of the Jewish people, leads the Jewish people on their path. Moshe Rabbeinu is now gone. So say Klal Yisrael, we now need a replacement for that, for Moshe Rabbeinu, who in turn was a replacement for the Malach. So Kum Asei Lanu Elohim Asher Yelchu Lefoneinu. Go and make for us someone who also carries some aspect of the Shechina, not in a divine way. That's what we said before, Shechina Mitabaret Mitach Grono Shalom Moshe. Moshe Rabbeinu is a conduit for the Shechina. So go and make some entity which will have some of the glory of Hashem, not a deity, but that whatever it is, that thing, will go before us and lead us like the Malach did and like Moshe Rabbeinu did.
Is there anyone else besides the Rabban
gives instructions
because of Hashem,
of course? Yeah.
So
let's see. V'nei l'kod Hashem nasa. Says the Ibn Ezra, this Egel was made for the glory of Hashem. It was not a replacement for Hashem, Cholila. It was not an Avodah Zarah. It was not an alternative. It was made for the glory of Hashem. Al Kain Bama Aaron Mizbeach Lefanov. And that's what Aaron had in mind by building the Mizbeach in front of the Egel Hazal. The Chlish Yitzvachu Machar Lechvod Hashem. And that's what he announced. Chag Hashem Machar. Tomorrow is going to be a holiday for whom? For Yudkei Vavke. Right? Yudkei Vavke says that Ibn Ezra is Hashem Yisborach. In other words, he's not talking about anybody else. So Aaron says we now have a replacement Nachman. We now have a replacement Moshe. We now have a replacement figure who will go before us. Now again, you'll say, so how can they? You know, how could a golden calf replace Moshe Rabbeinu? So the answer is, Moshe Rabbeinu has many, many roles. He wears many hats. You know, he's a lawgiver. You know, he's a judge of the Jewish people. But he's also that conduit of the Shekhinah who can lead the Jewish people forward. And before Moshe Rabbeinu, Malach served that role. So an Egel Azov, the people thought, could serve that role as well. You just need some kind of thing to channel the Kvod Hashem in order to be that which will lead the Jewish people on their travels through the wilderness.
Why did it have to be an Egel, not another human being?
Okay, well, how are they going to get the other human being? That's the question, right?
Was God choosing all the Malach? Is God choosing Moshe Rabbeinu?
Okay.
How could they not have realized it's God's choice to decide who would be the quote-unquote Malach leading the people?
Okay, so they're both excellent questions. How did they come onto an Egel Azov? How did they think they had the right to choose? Let's see a little bit more of the Ibn Ezra, and then we'll try to answer some of these questions. Well, to give them some time to prepare. You know, let's do it tomorrow. Right? So, the Chen Ofesh Kashed Tzivam, right? So, and the truth is they did everything that Aaron told them. Is that Shuva Sarah? So Moshe Rabbeinu comes down to Aaron and says, by the way, what's up with all the stuff that's going on over here? You know, they're dancing around the Egel Azov. How did this come to be? So Aaron tells Moshe Rabbeinu, Ki nikalu alov, hukmok shahodaticho, ki kol kihilo v'achareho al higenai, v'im achareho el, hilushevach, Kemo Vayikalu El Hamelech Shlomo. Right? Ibn Ezra introduces an interesting idea over here. He says, we sometimes find in Tanakh, Vayikalu, they gathered El to someone. Sometimes we find in Tanakh, Vayikalu Al, they gathered on top of someone. Vayikalu El means that they gathered together with somebody for constructive purpose. Right? He quotes the pasuk that describes how Klal Yisrael gathered to Shlomo HaMelech when Shlomo HaMelech was going to dedicate the Beis HaMikdash. That's Vayikalu El. Vayikalu Al implies that something nefarious is going on. You know, they gathered against someone, on top of somebody. So here Aaron tells Moshe Rabbeinu that the people gathered Al me. Right? The Zela Toyodata Sa'am Kibirahu. When creating the Egel HaZav. And in fact, when the people originally came to him and said, you know, we want this thing which is going to go before us, right? So they had no intention of making an Avodah Zarah. What happened? Aaron acted with the best of intentions. The people came to Aaron with the best of intentions. But once the Egel HaZav was built, a portion of the people, led by the Erev Rav, took what had been an innocuous experiment and began to worship it as an Avodah Zarah. Right? In other words, it wasn't planned to be an Avodah Zarah. But they took something which was made with the best of intentions and said, oh, look at this. Another deity. Another God. That's what Aaron says to Moshe. After your battle, Sa'am, you know the people, ki zirahu, because they are mixed with evil. That's how he understands that term, zirahu. Not rahu, not that they are evil. Zirah, they are mixed with evil. We have this group among us who took what was a perfectly good malach to go before us and transformed it somehow into an avodah zarah. The altisma. The Pasuk says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe Rabbeinu at Ephod Har Sinai, your nation has done something evil. They have rapidly turned away from the path. It doesn't say that the entire people have worshipped the Avodah Zarah. Soru Maher, I mean, you know, it doesn't say that everyone did it. It doesn't say Kol Amcha. Shichet Amcha. Your people, sometimes a portion of the people can be referred to as the people themselves. V'hinei Kol Ovdei Ha'egel Hashem Avodah Zarah. Right? Those who worship the Egel clearly held it as Avodah Zarah. She'amru Eil Elohecho Yisrael. They said, these are your gods, so Israel, Haifakim, Rashavtam, Ohayu, Rakshloshif, Halachim. After all, there are only 3,000 people who were put to death for worshipping the eagle. Apparently, only those were the ones who actually saw the eagle as Avodah Zarah. Everybody else understood correctly that it was not meant to be an Avodah Zarah. The Haim, the Hineim, Hatsi, Asiris, Asiris, Amachaneh. Right? They were half of a tenth of a tenth of the entire camp. Okay, so HaKlal Kilonatha Kehogen HaDerach Shenesha Wuzsoyim Shahoya Avodah Zarah. Right? Now, the problem was not that Aaron built an Avodah Zarah. The problem was that Aaron built something which was misinterpreted by some to be an Avodah Zarah. But that's still a very far cry from building an Avodah Zarah itself.
Right.
It's Ha'am, right. Tiburahu, right, okay.
Right.
So Rashi quotes this, Kishichet Amcha, right? It was your people who you brought out, you know, don't hold me, it was your fault for bringing the air around to begin with. If an Ezra doesn't make that deal, you know, he doesn't understand it in that way, but he just says, Amcha, a portion of your people. I don't think he is fixated on the possessive part of it. So see a little bit more. So, you'll ask, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu get so angry at Aaron? Aaron acted with the best of intentions. He said, Aaron, after all, was responsible for this Avodah Zarah coming about, even though, again, that wasn't his intention. Sometimes, the best of intentions leads to horrific results. Right? So, again, even with the best of intentions, a person can be held liable for his actions. But, to go back to some of the original questions that Ben Ezra had, why wasn't Aaron killed? Why was Aaron Zochah to be the Kohen Gadol afterwards? Why isn't Aaron held to a very high standard where he, should have given up his life rather than lead to the worshiping of Avodah Zarah? The answer is because Aaron, whatever you want to fault him, the fault was they didn't think through the consequences of what he was doing. You can't fault him for actual Avodah Zarah. Then he adds the following. The Chachmei Amazolos Amru, Ki HaMachderes HaGidola L'Shnayim HaElyonim, Haifa B'Mazal Shur. Right? Astrologers say, and again we know that the Ibn Ezra, among his many other talents, was a great astrologer. Astrologers say that the Machderes HaGidola, the great group of the seven celestial bodies, right? The seven celestial bodies were the five known planets at that time, plus the sun and the moon. When you focus on the Shnayim HaElyonim, the two highest of those seven celestial bodies, which are Saturn and Jupiter, don't ask me why, but the highest two of those seven celestial bodies are associated with the mazel of Shor. Right? They're associated with the mazel of the Ax. The Ax is the mazel of the month of Iyar, right? Taurus. Right? So the question is, why Davka and Ego Hansov? Again, I certainly don't claim to understand fully what he's saying over here, but basically, Ibn Ezra is quoting those who are saying the decision to make an Ego Hazov specifically was based on an understanding of astrology, that would be the right malach to lead them at that particular time. Is that Hazov? But that's foolish. Ki lo haifa rak b'mazal d'li. Right? The high point of these of Saturn and Jupiter is associated with the mazel of the bucket, which is Aquarius during the month of Shvat. Dal derech chokmas hamazolos hu mazel Yisrael. And if you understand the chokmah of mazolos, right? So you see that the mazel of Aquarius is the mazel of Yisrael. The rabbi nisuza so dor achar dor, gam ani ro'isi kocho, v'nei samu v'chatsi hashomayim. Right? Many have tried to figure out this concept, and I as well have what to say about this concept. That the Dli Aquarius is associated with Klal Yisrael and is placed on the halfway point of the heavens. I'm not going to try to explain what all that means, right? Basically because I don't understand what it means, right? But the basic question, again, from whatever we can understand, we can glean from the Ibn Ezra, is that the Ibn Ezra is suggesting that the choice to make a Shor specifically, was not an arbitrary choice. It has something to do with an understanding of astrology. Right? So, again, why Davka? That's beyond my pay grade. But, you know, again, it wasn't a random choice. It was an appropriate choice of a leader based on an astrological decision. Now, let me go to Shelley's question as well. Why do the Jewish people think that they're entitled to make a replacement for Moshe, for a Malach? Don't they have to wait for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to reveal, you know, who this leader is going to be? Perhaps, but one could also understand why perhaps erroneously they might have looked into the stars, saw, as their understanding was, that the, you know, that the creating a shor, you know, creating an ox, seemed to have been determined by the stars as being appropriate for the occasion. And, you know, perhaps, you know, they felt, again, rightly or wrongly, that the stars were directing them to pick this particular, you know, leader at this particular time. In which case, you know, from their perspective, they might have been saying, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was revealing to us that this was the proper thing to do, you know, under any under these circumstances. Right, right. And I think he's working with the simple shot in the psukim, you know, Vayasar Sova Cheres, right, and it says that Aaron carved it out. You know, he's not describing it as an arbitrary emergence or something that they threw in a piece of paper, Aleshor. No, he's working with the simple shot. They chose to make a shor, and the decision to make a shor was apparently, I think, in his understanding, influenced by their understanding of astrology.
Is it possible the reason why they chose an answer to this question is to start off in the Shrine, Moshe is the leader, then transfer it over to the Malach, and then the Malach transfers it over to Moshe. And now, Moshe, they thought, being dead, there's no one to transfer over for the next leadership, because he's the front. In other words, he needs someone who's a transfer and a transferee. So since they saw the vision, they saw them show Moshe his head and then floating around the Shemayim, so there's no continuity, so we have to do that.
Maybe you could suggest that, right? In other words, you know, they needed someone to pass on the baton, so to speak. I don't know.
Right.
Again, maybe it comes back to their understanding astrologically that the ego would be appropriate. Maybe the same way that the Kruvim are children, maybe they felt that having whatever the significance of having a child, maybe there's a certain purity or innocence that's associated with the ego. I don't know. Yeah. Right, so what should he have said? Why make an ego as well? Why not just say it's me? Right. So I guess it shows this humility of Aaron. I mean, even though he was a great person, he didn't feel himself that the Shekhinah was upon him. And you say, okay, so how did he think that this image would have the Shekhinah upon it? I don't know. I mean, but he certainly didn't feel that he could step into that role. Maybe a person knows himself best, right? Right, but again, according to the Benazir, he's not trying to trick them at all. Right? In other words, they asked for a replacement for the Malach and for Moshe to lead them. Here's your replacement, the Egel Azal. Now, Kagla Shem Lachar, now let's go and worship the Rebbe Shalom. There's no Avodah Zarah in this whatsoever. He's not tricking, he's not delaying, you know. He probably thought Moshe Rabbeinu was dead as well, according to the Benazir. He doesn't think he's coming back imminently. Now, so why didn't he think that he was the next in line to step into that role? Probably because, he just didn't feel that he had it. He didn't feel it. Right? Right? Right. So maybe he just didn't feel that he was up to that task.
But arrogant. Because that if he made himself his leader, his Moshe is going to come back down. Moshe comes back down, they were going to go into Samaria. Somebody else will lead. But if he's always the leader, then what's going to happen is Moshe is going to come down. Once he becomes the leader, you don't want to give it up. Because my place is with the war. Aaron, if he comes down, Aaron makes himself the leader, maybe Moshe thinks that Aaron really wants to be the leader. Wants to vote Moshe off. Maybe it was Aaron wanted to be in the holy stone road, he didn't want to cause any type of let me get, I'll tell them to keep him busy. Tell them to give him the gold for the hearing. It'll keep him busy. In the meantime, Moshe will come back. I'll keep him busy. And by the time Moshe comes back, he'll be showing what he saw. We're not going to do anything.
That's the Maisa Sofer at his best, you know, that's what he's trying to do, to try to, you know, sow fear in the hearts of people. This Mahalach of the Ibn Ezra, that, you know, this approach that, that really this wasn't an Avodah Zarah at all, is echoed by many other Rishonim, but the Ibn Ezra, the Rambam writes in this vein, the Chizkuni later on writes in this vein, there's a famous passage in the Kuzari, the Kuzari depicts how the king of the Khazars asked the rabbi of the Kuzari, you know, how could your forefathers have worshipped an Avodah Zarah? And Rabbi Yehuda Levi in the Kuzari says, nah, it wasn't Avodah Zarah, you know, and gives a mahalach, an approach very similar to the Ibn Ezra over here. The Kuzari may have been the first one to actually articulate this idea that, you know, that the Egel Azar was not in fact Avodah Zarah, it was an attempt to substitute for Moshe Rabbeinu in some way, as opposed to being, you know, an idolatry. We happen to know that Ibn Ezra and the Kuzari, Yehuda Halevi, were extremely close to one another. They may have been related. There are various legends that they may have been father-in-law and son-in-law, brothers-in-law, you know, or maybe not, but they certainly knew one another. That's the Ibn Ezra quotes Rabbi Yehuda Halevi several times in his commentary. So it stands to reason that Rabbi Yehuda Halevi and Ibn Ezra might have discussed this parsha. But the Ibn Ezra is certainly one of the first Rishonim, before the Ramban, before the Chizkuni, to lay out this idea that the Egel Azav is not in fact Avodah Zarah, and that explains, you know, many of the questions that we have regarding the Psukim. And it was really a, you know, still a very, very novel approach that he takes in explaining the Pasha. Right, so I mean it's a scary thing, but apparently the answer is things that are done with the best of intentions, if they go awry, they can haunt us forever and ever. It's a scary idea. Right? But we're being punished till today because of a misunderstanding of something. Right? Which is a very, very scary concept. Okay, we'll pick off next week. We'll be back to Wednesday night next week. I apologize for moving the sphere this week. So next week we'll be back to the regular scheduled Wednesday night.